Those who can do, those who cannot do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com.
It's the Fly Over Sky Show on the Fancy Pants Gangsters Podcast Network.
Yeah, yeah, this is King Django, and you're listening to the Fly Over Sky Show on the Fancy Pants Gangsters Podcast Network.
Flyover Show can be found at FancyPantsGangsters.com and MNSky.com.
Ska Show, brought to you by MN Ska, Minnesota's ska community at MNSka.com, and the Fancy Pants Gangsters Podcast Network at FancyPantsGangsters.com. We're back in the swing of things, baby. We've got a bunch of different episodes up now, and hopefully you're going to get used to hearing my voice more often. But on the line, we've got a special guest with us, returning. Welcome back to the show, the Rocksteady Queen of New Orleans. It's our very own Maddie Ruthless. Maddie, how's it going?
Hi, how are you, Courtney? I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. I've been doing good. Yeah, I put down my podcast mic for almost a year, so it's good to get back in the swing of things. And I don't think we've had you on the show for, I don't know, maybe a couple years now.
Wow, has it really been that long?
I know, time
crazy.
Really,
what happened? Oh my god.
Well, yeah, it was when you put out your last album, Hold the Phone? Was that?
Yeah, that's correct. With The Secret Affair. Oh, that feels like an ages ago, but yeah, that was very exciting, and so much has happened. I'm so happy that you decided to come talk to me again.
Yeah, well, why don't you fill us in? What's happened between now and then? I know it's a lot, but why don't you walk us through what's going on?
Well, let me just sum it up. Yeah. So basically, I have relocated from well, that's almost not fair to say. I'm a bi-city person now, so I'm spending my time split between New Orleans and New York. And that is because I play guitar now for a band called The Fourth Rites.
And yeah, old friends
before,
of the show.
Yes, of course. And sharing the stage occasionally with your band, The Prize Fighters, we're happy to say. I want it to happen again soon. But basically, before I joined The Fourth Rites, I put out a record with The Fourth Rites, of more Maddie Ruthless material, and that's the record that just came out. It's called Maddie Ruthless featuring The Fourth Rites and Friends. And the Friends on that record are pretty exciting people. I recorded it in the basement of famed reggae producer Tikla, a.k.a. Victor Axelrod. And some of the guests on that record are Vic Ruggiero from The Slackers, Lickle Dan from a band called The Frighteners here in New York, and our friend Miran, who is an original Fourth Rites member but now lives in Canada. So he was sort of a special guest in the studio as well. And the record actually includes some dubbing and special tracks by Tikla.
So for those who don't know Tikla or Victor Axelrod, like he's kind of a famous dude, isn't he?
Well, he's kind of a big deal. I mean, I'm going to hesitate to go into too many details because I don't want to get it wrong, but he's worked very closely with the Daptone Records and performed with Amy Winehouse. He's also kind of the man behind the Easy Star All-Stars at Dub Side of the Moon. He's put out his own material that's probably the best out of all of that, which is one of his records is called Tikla versus Victor Axelrod. And basically, he's just a really nice guy. And he's got a basement in Brooklyn. And he's got a lot of old vintage reggae magic down there. He has old reverb and echo and a tape machine, and he's just got a lot of good taste, and we trust him a lot. So the Fourth Rates are really lucky to just go and be able to visit him sometimes to make some reggae in his basement.
So, and, I mean, like, I guess, how did you meet all these friends that ended up collaborating on your last record? Yeah.
Well, I know. I feel very popular here in New York. But basically, I guess, let's see, the Fourth Rates were very kind to ask me to go on tour with them about a year ago. And I just decided that I couldn't ever stop touring with them ever again. It was just a really magical time for me, and I thought the collaboration was just too good to just put down. And so we decided to stick together, and they asked me to move to New York, and I obliged them. And a lot of things happened with the Fourth Rights during the time that I moved to New York, which I think you're going to speak to Jack Wright at some point here in the future, maybe.
Oh, we'd love to have him on the show, yeah.
About the Fourth Rates journey. But, you know, we lost a couple members, and then I replaced our old guitarist on guitar. And, yeah, so now we're kind of just, like, back at it. And, you know, just working with different musicians and playing a little bit out of town and just hitting it back into it with full speed. And I think it was good. We kind of took a little break, and we worked on some things, and we changed up our sound, and we learned a lot, and we just kind of incubated ourselves. And now I'm with the Fourth Rights, and we're writing new music. And honestly, just as a solo artist, from that perspective, working with somebody as talented as Jack Wright, it's just been like fireworks, I feel like, the collaboration between us. So I think the songs we're writing together are better than what we wrote separately.
What makes that awesome partnership work so well? Like, what makes you and Jack sort of, music-wise, gel so well? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Jack is a really special guy. He's a real artist, and he's just very patient, and he doesn't kind of... We don't hold each other back at all, and we're both just really patient with each other and just not judgmental. I think that's what's really special about finding a group of people like the Fourth Rights, was that Jack Wright and Matt Birdie, they're both just like very non-judgmental and open, and we do a lot of experimentation before we come up with something together that we're actually going to perform in front of people. And I got to say, you know, all that experimentation, we're playing around with rock steady music, which is like music from the 60s that we're just trying to do our way. And so, like, a lot of bad music happens before good music happens. A lot of, like, experimentation. And, yeah, I think what's special about working with him and how the vibe is just right is that we just try it and we practice and we just work at it till we get it right and take our time with it.
Well, that's really interesting, you know, with all that experimentation, I'm sure, like you said, a lot of bad music ends up before good music happens. Well, like, being non-judgmental, that is so key to that process because, right. I mean, like, you need to have a sort of mindset when you're writing music, you almost have to have that sense of like trust, where it's like, I know this doesn't sound awesome now, but like, you trust in my abilities, I trust in your abilities, we're gonna make something work here.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's so important. And then just that, you know, even though on stage Jack Wright is like very glamorous, he's Mr. Jack Wright of the Fourth Rights, and on stage, you know, I'm Matty Ruthless, Rock City Queen, but in the practice space, we're just like kids, and I think it's really cool that we still like have so much respect for each other, even though it's not always easy coming up with stuff and working out issues and whatever, you know, problems come with being in a band. We just are like, you know, all the odds are against us. We're in a rock steady band, so we might as well just be nice to each other and figure it out together, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, and So, like, with this new album, or the new Matty Ruthless and Friends album, I mean, are there any stories behind it? Like, any tracks or songs that are you're really proud of?
Hold on. Let me look at the track list again and see what I can tell you. Yeah, I just think it's really eclectic. One example of Jack and I working together is there's a soul tune on the record, which I would have, you know, I'm kind of a reggae head, and I wasn't sure about playing a soul tune, but Jack really sold it to me, and I trusted him, and he wrote a song called Liar that's on the record, and I just think it turned out really cool. It's very, like, garage rock and raw, and, you know, we're not the trained musicians of Motown, but I think it sounds like we have, you know, the passion is really there, and it's almost just, like, better because it's rawer. And,
a lot of feeling. That song is by far, it was one of my, like, I remember the day your album came out, I was like, well, I got to get this, you know, this is Matty Ruthless
you.
And I listened to it, and that was a track that just stood out in my mind. It was like, it's got that sort of like that northern, like sort of like that four on the floor sort of like feel to it, you know, like that stomper feel to it. And it was just, I don't know, it was really, really good. You guys did a really great job with that. How did that track come around? Like, I mean, obviously it was a departure from, you know, the reggae
rock
stuff that you've been doing.
Well, so yeah, like on the record, there's a rock city tune, Evening Time, and there's reggae, there's Twist the Knife, and there's a skinhead reggae song called Sympathy. But like with Liar, Jack was working on it all throughout tour, and he kind of gave it to me and just said, hey, I think you should sing this song. And it was like just so amazing for somebody to be working so hard on their song and to just give it to you. I was just, you know, just thinking about it, I feel like very sappy about it. Like, it was very sweet of him to give me his song and let me try to interpret it myself. And we were just working on it, and it wasn't, you know, it kind of just felt itself out. You know, it wasn't a slow rock city tune. It wasn't reggae. It was just, it sounded best like a driving kind of soul thing. And I just think we kind of all wanted to play something fast, you know.
We've
been playing a lot of slow stuff, and even though, like, most of the time we're all in the groove and, like, in the chop and the cut with reggae, sometimes I think just being young people, we kind of just want to play a fast song every once in a while. And it's like, how are we going to get away with this? Okay, let's play. We don't want to play ska punk. Let's play a soul song.
it worked out great, because it's not just like, oh, they're trying their hand at a soul song. I mean, it definitely has that, like, that Matty Ruthless and forthright sort of, you know, like, fingerprint on the soul style.
I think it's really cool.
It still has like that signature Matty Ruthless sass that I've always come to know and love.
Thank you. I try to make that come out at every possible chance. So I think this record is laden with sass. So
laden with sass. I like that. I like that phrase. It's a good one.
Yeah. So now we're kind of just working on a new forthright record, which we're recording ourselves, and but getting a lot of advice and help from our friend Sikla still, and. Yeah, it's just kind of a journey in the works. And, you know, I put out this record and I just put it out, but I'm also just bubbling with new material, so I really can't wait to put out even more.
I suppose now being a part of the forthrights, I mean, that in itself, I'm sure, is kind of a catalyst for creativity. You want to, like, you know, just make more and move on to, like, this next thing. Because I know the forthrights just put out an album too, so it's kind of like you guys have put out material that caps off this time in your lives, and now it's like time to show what the next thing
we've been doing now.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're all dying to do, is that we did this and it was an amazing journey, and both of the records we're really proud of and they're incredible. And now that we've, like, formed, like, Voltron, we want to make, like, the Voltron Rocksteady record. So. Yeah, which is, like, no pressure or anything.
Sure.
But, I'm really excited. And to be recording it ourselves has been such, you know, trial and error and arguments and blood and sweat and tears, but it's all worth it. Because we're learning a lot, and we're using a really cool old analog Tascam 380 tape machine, which is just, it sounds, you know, you can put whatever into it and it kind of comes out sounding like reggae in the end, you know?
It's right, just, right.
It's a reggae time machine, so it's pretty magical.
Yeah, there's something about recording the tape that just is, yeah, is it's that throwback to the past, and you know, you don't even need to turn on a computer. You have this old equipment, this old dusty equipment, and just somehow it gives it that old vintage magic. Which, I mean, the Fourth Rides, I mean, that's kind of what I've always thought that they've sounded like traditionally. It's they've got that old vintage sound. Now that they have Matty Ruthless in the mix, now that you guys are working on this new stuff, like what's the sound, what's it sound like? What's the new stuff going to be more like?
So basically, you know, it's very collaborative, and Jack Wright is singing half or more of the material. And, I'm still writing. We're kind of just collaborating, writing, and sometimes I'll write a song for him to sing, and sometimes he'll write one for me to sing. And so there's that aspect of us kind of trading off and singing a lot of harmony together and working just really hard on the harmony thing. We're purists and we're nerds and we're just trying to make it sound like old reggae and old rocksteady. And, you know, no matter what we do, we know that we're going to put a modern twist on it just because of who we are. And,
right.
We're like young people living in Brooklyn, and our songs are about that. But we just kind of like, we really want it to feel like this vintage aesthetic and just this kind of very groovy thing. So we're kind of like dabbling a lot in early reggae, which is just sort of our style of choice right now. You know, a lot of people call it skinhead reggae.
Mm-hmm.
And, but we don't want, you know, we're like kind of subdued. Like we don't want to be too like flashy and over the top, really. We just want to be like introspective and groovy and hard. And like, it's just I feel like it's a tougher sound.
Yeah.
So,
is it hard to strike that balance though? Is it hard to balance out that authenticity with the modern, like with what, you know, modern sound?
Definitely. We just don't, you know, it's very easy, I feel like, to slip into that kind of, how do I explain it, like, to be kind of tacky and cheesy and, you know, to use the loud Hammond that's like, you know, there's a time and a place for different sounds, and I feel like we're kind of just trying to really, like, hone it in and like, really listen to the details of this music that we're all so obsessed with and try to just, like, imitate the nuances that make it special to us and make that bass and drum come together like so tough and so like the perfect kind of puzzle, you know? So it's difficult, you know, it's difficult. And it's, for me, it was, I'm playing guitar now. And so, which I've always done, but a lot of people kind of take for granted the reggae or rocksteady, rhythm guitar skanks,
mm-hmm.
and that's something I've learned to not take for granted at all. It's not easy. It's so much harder than people make it out to be, and a lot of guitarists are like, oh, yeah, that's boring. You're just playing the skanks, and no way. It's, you have to have rhythm just like the drummer and the different, like, nuances of pick parts and the different kinds of skanks. I'm just really, like, I've been going to school, just, like, really listening, trying to get it right.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, I always have...
I'm nerding out over here.
I have the utmost respect for anyone that plays guitar like that. I mean, you won't catch me anywhere near a string instrument, because I'm just completely inept at it, but, it's challenging. I've tried to learn it before myself, and it's just, I mean... Yeah, people should not take that sound for granted, because it's tough to make. So, like,
yeah, it's not easy. So we're just practicing a lot.
Well, that's good. Now, you know, what's it been like to? I mean, When you were on the show last, we kind of went through your background and how you kind of fell in love with this old Jamaican music. And now that you're in this group that has similar passions, what's that been like? Is it easy? Are there differences in your guys' tastes and preferences?
Yeah, well, I feel like in New Orleans, I was kind of on an island of New Orleans music, and I was playing reggae, you know, in more of it was more of a lonely position, but, you know, of course, New Orleans is where I grew up. It's my home, and I wasn't a lonely person, but just to be playing reggae, I was kind of isolated there. And to now be in New York, you know, I'm very blessed to just be kind of like very immersed in reggae all the time and kind of, you know, going to see a lot of original artists and going out to different reggae events all the time. And so I've just been feeling like really lucky to be here and to be kind of immersed in that. And yeah, we definitely have different tastes. And I'm a dancehall DJ. I put on a lot of dancehall nights apart from the Fourth Rites. So I've kind of always had that real strong love and taste and knowledge of dancehall music from the mid 80s all the way up until today. But and Jack is kind of just, he knows a lot about Americana music, blues, jazz. He's coming from like a real musical background with a jazz degree himself. And Matt Birdie has just like been roots all day, every day, constantly. And we've been playing a lot with Rich Tirana, who's a drummer of the Frighteners. Mm-hmm. He's been playing bass for us as of late. And yeah, he comes from a really rootsy background too, but we all kind of have our first love, which is rocksteady. And I think we're all kind of like really happy to put whatever was in our iPods down and to kind of like take just aspects of all these different eras of Jamaican and American music and kind of like meet in the middle back at rocksteady. It's like, I think it's really cool how we all kind of are like, look, the premise is early reggae, rocksteady. So just bring what you've got to the table here. And, you know, luckily we're all like, you know, nobody in our band is like a metalhead, but right. We're all like kind of coming from Jamaican music. So it's not too far of a stretch, but I like the way Matt kind of tries to pull us in the roots direction on drums, and Jack's playing the Winston Wright style organ lines. And I'm just wondering, like, can I chat some dancehall lyrics? And I like how we're all kind of pulling in these different directions, but we're like trying to stay grounded in rocksteady and like make that our rock. So
that's interesting. I mean, it's really exciting to hear that sort of collaboration going on. I think you're right. It's easy to go in a specific genre direction, but it's like, mm-hmm. you know, pulling these elements, these different elements, and kind of mixing and matching and forming
right.
this sound. I mean, it's going to sound different and fresh, even though, I mean,
yeah, more eclectic.
Yeah.
Well, you got to think, like, what? It's been like 50, 60 years of Jamaican music that has gone down in that island, and that's like a lot of years of pop music that we're kind of drawing from.
Right.
And, you know, occasionally we're going to hear a dancehall song or a roots or a Nyabingi song that, you know, we fall in love with and we'll want to like bring those elements in. But we're pretty good at keeping each other focused. Like, you know, sometimes I'll be like, no way, we're not doing that. Or they'll keep me in check. Like, Maddie, you can't be Buju Banton today. You have to be Maddie. I'm like, okay, you're right. You guys are right. I'll chill out.
This is Victor Rice, and you're listening to the Flyover Ska Show on the Fancy Pants Gangsters Podcast Network.
What's it feel like? As you know, Rock City music really was only in prominence for, I mean, at most, like 2 years in Jamaica.
Right.
how does it feel to be a band that is rooted in such a fleeting flash in the pan, as it were, in Jamaica? Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's really interesting. You're correct. I mean, it's funny. It's like it wasn't too much time. So, you know, we're definitely kind of always floating to ska and floating into early reggae. And, but, you know, it is crazy that there's times when I felt like, yeah, I've heard all the rocksteady that exists in that was ever made, and then my mind is blown because it's just endless. It's incredible. In that time period, Jamaica was the third biggest producer of pop music for the world. So it was like America, England, Jamaica, as far as who was making the most records to be shipped internationally. And so for such a tiny island, they were like, there's such a wealth of music, even in just that 2 years. So I think, and I've met people who've been like, really studying rocksteady for, you know, 20 years or so, and if they haven't gotten to the bottom of it, I feel pretty secure that we aren't either. So,
well, I'm that's a good point.
I feel like there's more to learn, and I'm really, really interested in hearing, you know, even deeper cuts that we haven't heard yet, which I'm sure there's millions of, and it's just a shame that I feel like we don't know too many people, and there's not as many people even alive that were instrumental in that era of Jamaican music. And so it's hard to just learn from the recordings. I feel like we have a lot of questions that we wish we could have access to somebody to answer for us. But
Every day it seems like
lucky.
There's
there are
less
some...
and less people that were involved
right.
with that.
I know. So, we're lucky to be in New York because there are people around who remember that time and who, you know, well, there's plenty of people around who remember that time, but there are people who are musicians during that time kind of floating around. So I got to work up my nerve and say, hey, excuse me, I have a question about the guitarist gang.
What's it like? What's it like being in New York now? All I know is what I've heard from the bands that are there, the people that live there, as far as that scene is concerned. But what's it been like, you know, moving from New Orleans and going into the New York scene?
Well, in New Orleans, I was going to all kinds of concerts all the time. So I'd see brass bands, I'd see a lot of bounce music, I'd see a lot of, you know, rock, just circus acts. I'd see everything in New Orleans. But in New York, I'm very immersed in reggae, and I, you know, the majority of the shows I go to are either from this particular scene of rocksteady revivalists or from being put on by Jamaican people, or, you know, it's just all centered around reggae music. So how do I want to say this? It's great. I mean, I'm so busy. I'm having so much fun. It's amazing. And it's where I've wanted to be for a long time. And I feel like I really owed it to myself to kind of go to where I felt like this music that I love was like really the strongest. And New York, the scene there is so much different than California. It's very like, we're gritty kind of kids, and like most of the kids I play music with grew up in Queens, and you know, we're playing shows out there, we're playing shows all around Brooklyn. We do a lot of sweaty, dirty house parties. I just feel like our whole kind of style is just very raw, and you know, we're just putting it together with what we have. We don't have any good equipment. Everything's broken. We're all broke. We're just, like, trying to throw it together no matter what, and we'll play anywhere for anybody. And, the shows are just, the community is extremely supportive. Like, Agent J with his crazy bald head crew, so supportive, putting on so many amazing shows where he kind of merges the punk and the reggae scene.
Right.
And and he's just so instrumental. And then, and everybody in that crew, Ja Point, Grace of Spades. All the DJs are just so instrumental to kind of like bringing everybody together. And we're just so lucky to have other bands that are kind of doing what we're doing. Like our best friends are the Frighteners, and they're so talented. And we're just, we're always keeping each other on our toes, because it's just, every time they put out a song, I'm like, oh no, that was so good. And how will the Fourth Rates ever put out a song like that? But I know that the Frighteners are saying the same thing about us, and we have a very friendly competition, and it's really just, it's so special to be kind of in a community of other people my age who are doing this. Because, of course, you know, we have the Slackers here, too, but they're like, a little, you know, they're, the Slackers are considerably older than me, and it's just so nice to always be working with people who are kind of in my position in life, where we kind of have this whole thing ahead of us to push it together.
Yeah,
and,
having
cool to have like a lot of fresh energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, having a community like that is just it's amazing. When I moved to the Twin Cities, I never thought that there was anything here, and then all of a sudden I found it. You know, I found all these bands.
Yeah, it's there.
It's interesting. And as much as there's a lot of bands, like, they all have their own niche, their own sound, and, like, yeah, like you said, there's a friendly competition, sort of, like, you know, I'll go out to shows here, and I'll be like, wow, that, you know, like, you're always constantly impressed, but also motivated then to, you know, go back into the workshop and, you know, make something, you know, better, or make something new and fresh. With you, it sounded like New Orleans, you were kind of your own thing, and so to be like the only fish in the pond, now to being in a whole, you know, community scene that's immersed with all this stuff, I mean, that's got to be it's got to be really interesting.
Yeah, it's different. In New Orleans, I spent a lot of time kind of just explaining to people what I was doing and what you know, I'm all about, and what Rocksteady is, and it's been very like nice to kind of just have that foundation here of there being like a huge to make an immigrant population in New York, and then also just this like serious community for Rocksteady, which is, I mean, it's so crazy. Like, who'd have thought that anywhere there would be, you know, groups of kids who were interested in 60s reggae music? But yeah, I guess thank you to the internet for bringing everybody together. Yeah, but in New Orleans, there was a small community, and it's funny, it's kind of like, I don't have an actual experience of this, so I don't really know, but if you grow up in Barbados, I don't think your parents listen to, like, if you grew up in Trinidad, you're listening to soca, you're not listening to dancehall.
Right.
So, New Orleans is kind of like almost a part of that Caribbean culture, where we have our own thing. It's there's New Orleans music. So when you're a person down in New Orleans saying, well, I'm trying to preserve Rocksteady music, they'll say, well, what are you talking about? We're trying to preserve New Orleans music. So, which is amazing. And that's what I grew up with. So of course, like, that's what I want people to do there. But it's just nice to kind of come to a city like New York, where it's almost like a blank page, for who you could be and what you could do.
Right.
You could do anything and be anybody. So it's just cool, like, to find a culture to be a part of.
It must be nice to be, to be in, one of the bigger outlets of that, of this subculture, I guess, you know, and not have to explain yourself. People already have that appreciation for the music you love. So,
it's nice.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, yeah, it's awesome, and so welcoming, too. Everybody's just been really nice to me here.
Since you are a aficionado of Rocksteady music, what makes, what do you listen for? What makes a really good Rocksteady song? Like, what do you tune into?
Well, Studio One, I think, makes all the best Rocksteady songs. So I listen to Studio One, but I listen to it's such a subtle thing, I think, the what makes Rock City good. It's just, I think it's the interplay between the drums and the bass, and I look for really interesting bass lines that are very simple and but yet driving. And I think if I'm still moving to it now, then it really stood the test of time. And so I listen for, like, serious rhythm and then also just vocal harmonies and vocal solos that are, like, really emotionally powerful, too. So
yeah.
Those are kind of Ken Booth, Moving Away is, like, a great example for me.
Oh, yeah.
Golly, I could just... Studio One is everything to me. That's the entire catalog is my favorite.
Like, what do you think made Studio One so special, though? Like, for in regards to Rock City?
I would say the taste of the caliber of artists that they picked for to record, that Coxon picked, and just the balance between the way it was recorded. It sounds punchy, but kind of, like, you know, blended together really seamlessly. It's... You know, like I said, it's very subtle. It's very, but it's powerful, you know? I think I would have to say it's, for me, it's the vocals and the lyrics a lot, too. But, yeah, the rhythms are just, those rhythms are the rhythms that carried through reggae for 50 more years. And, like, dancehall today is still being made on the Studio One foundational rhythms that they put out at the time. So
yeah.
I just feel like it's like, it's that kind of magic where it became timeless music. It's like golden vaults of reggae.
No, absolutely. You know, and I think they, you know, when from the research and from my own discovery of rocksteady music, I mean, it appears that, like, it was kind of born out of, you know, trying to slow down the rhythms of ska and, like, letting the bass play around mm-hmm. more and discover, like, these different rhythms.
Right.
That weren't...
They
were lost in ska because they were so fast. So it's like, you know, rhythm
right.
is so important to rocksteady.
Well, there's so much, like, energy and celebration in ska. You know, it came out right when Jamaica gained its independence. So there's a serious, like, amount of optimism, I feel like, amongst Jamaican people, and just, like, ska kind of echoes that with, like, how fast, the kind of, it's like party music.
Yeah.
And even though it's so much more complicated than that, really. It's really, like, about social justice and a variety of very dark subject matter, love, everything. But, I think rocksteady is kind of a reaction to Jamaican independence not being what everybody hoped it would be. It kind of is almost like, slow down the party for a minute here, you guys. We're completely indebted to the IMF. We're, you know, we have been left, like, you know, I think it's kind of a sign of the times all over the world in the late 60s. It was like a time of social movement, and I think the lyrics in rocksteady and just kind of the attitude, the sort of, like, tough attitude that comes with it is very, like, reminiscent of just the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's always been
not to mention,
like
the psych. Yeah.
Oh, it's always been sort of like this heartbreaking sort of lyrical content, you know. It was always, you know, it was always rough, but it was melancholy. It was like this sort of, some of the most heart-wrenching love songs I've ever heard are, you know, rocksteady tunes from that era.
Mm-hmm.
And
totally.
some of the best vocal tunes. I mean, that was when a lot of the vocal groups got together in Jamaica.
Oh, yeah.
What I've always really loved about rocksteady too is that it's, on the very outset, it seems so simple. It's like, you know, if you were just casually just hear a song, you're like, oh, like, you know, you hear the tempo and you hear the vocal harmonies and stuff, and you think, you know, oh, okay. But, like, when you really break it all down, there's a lot going on underneath, bubbling underneath the surface there.
Sure. It's I mean, as a testament to that, us trying to play it, it's difficult. It's like a very perfect puzzle, and it's deceptively simple, and it's truly amazing, and it's backwards. You know, the whole thing is on the wrong beat, so it's like very contrary to what we grew up listening to, and so it's been like a real challenge, but like a very welcomed challenge to try to play it.
Yeah, absolutely.
As I'm sure you're experiencing yourself with your band.
Jeez, yeah. Well, and it's funny because like we love playing Rock City. In fact, it's like we'll play some songs, we'll do these things, and then it's like let's just crack out some, like, we'll just play some covers in rehearsal, and it's like, oh yeah,
uh-huh.
like let's, we should really write a Rock City tune. And so it's like, then we do, you know, because it's like,
yeah,
it always kind of goes around the horn a little bit. It's like, oh, I really want to play it, like make a skinhead reggae tune, and it's like, okay, and it's like, oh, you know, I really want to, like, we've got this horn riff to make for a ska song. It's like, okay, that's cool, but it always comes back around. It's like, oh yeah, we should just, you know, I've got a really great idea for a rocksteady tune, and it, you know,
that's great.
Even though it was such a short period, it's like, it, you know, we always come back to it.
Yeah, it's magical. So it's a really nice kind of like foundation or set of guidelines to write your own music to, and it's very danceable, as of course.
So oh yeah,
it's my preferred medium of art.
That's why they call you the Rocksteady Queen, right?
Yeah, that's great.
So, Maddie, you've got you're working on this new stuff. Like, you guys working on any sort of touring going on? Do you have any plans set yet for the rest of this year?
We're going to be sort of touring around the Northeast a little bit for the time being, and we're planning to spend a considerable amount of time in New Orleans this winter. I was thinking from like January to February, we discussed trying to spend some quality time touring around the South while it's very snowy up north, and we hope to, by the spring, kind of come make our way back out to you guys again and come visit you guys in the Midwest. So,
man,
we miss Indiana, we miss Michigan, and of course we miss the Prize Fighters. So,
well, you know, when you guys came up, I mean, the venue was kind of, it was subpar, but like, for whatever reason, it was just like the ingredients, the moment was right, and it just was such a very fun time. It was a very memorable time.
It was an explosion of, I feel like, yeah, it was a very memorable show for me. I think it was we had been on tour, the Four Sides had been on tour for 2 months at that point, which is a brutal odyssey of touring for any young band. And there's all types of emotions and frustrations and joy and sadness that were ready to just erupt. And I forget what we played the night before, and I guess, playing with you guys was so memorable the night before, I can't even remember. But, I think that by the time we got to you guys, we were ready to just play.
Well,
and
it was just, it was funny because, like, yeah, you guys were all, like, after, I mean, we stayed up late, we partied and whatever, and like you guys all crashed into my place, and it was just like the morning after, we're all kind of just recounting everything, and you're like, a lot of you guys were like, well, this is really like the most crazy we've been on the entire tour. And it was like,
yeah,
wow, like, I guess
geez, I'm trying to decide what made that night the night to kind of set it off. Just a lot of mixed feelings, long drives, the cooler weather after coming from like extreme heat to like the beautiful Midwestern kind of milder summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really drink on tour. In an effort to preserve my voice.
That's
and
interesting.
Having, whatever personal problems I felt were going through my head by the time we got to you guys. It just seemed like a good night to get drunk. So I think that contributed to whatever shenanigans took place.
I'll tell you what, like Minneapolis is a great show. It's a great place to get drunk. So yeah, you could get drunk.
I agree. Yeah.
I remember Matt Birdie and Sammy were up on the roof of the van, yeah, for a while. Like, we closed down several bars, so it was like, for whatever reason, it was like staggered bar closing, so it was like a lot of that happening.
I know.
There was a late night White Castle run. There was a lot of weird things that happened that night, but it was fun.
I know that Sammy carried me into your house, so that was...
Yeah, that for real.
That says it all, right?
Yeah. So, you know, like, I'm not saying that things have to be exactly the same, but all I'm saying is it would be amazing
to live up to
have a good time again with you guys and with you and the Fourth Rights. I mean, it's always a good time.
Yeah, you know it. Let everybody know we're coming back to shut all their bars down again.
Yeah, better look out. Well,
cool.
Maddie, thanks a lot.
Yeah, we want to play together.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Cool.
I'm really glad
thanks
you were
for
able
me
to
back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for calling in and taking the time. And for those who haven't heard, you should go online. Where can people find the latest Maddie Ruthless and Friends album?
I'm going to tell everybody right now they better go to www.maddieruthless.com. Wait, scratch that. That's not the website anymore. Rewind. MaddieRuthless.wordpress.com.
Yes.
And if they can't get to that, go to thefourthrights.com. They'll find everything there. And yeah, you can find links to buy both of our records. And yeah, it's time to pick it up. It's too much to not live without. So,
absolutely. Yeah. No, I love the album. You all should go out and get it out there on MaddieRuthless.wordpress.com.
That's great.
And I've been your host, Courtney Close, and for Maddie Ruthless and the Fourth Rights, and we're all saying skank up.